This is LeSere Bradley, Jr., welcoming you to another broadcast of the Baptist Bible Hour. I certainly appreciate you taking time to tune in. Many of you tell me you listen every day without fail, and I'm so glad to have you as a part of this radio audience. Desire your prayers that the Lord may bless these efforts and that our need will be supplied. If you've never visited our website, I encourage you to do so. Go to BaptistBibleHour.org. You can find a number of messages and articles and other items of interest for you there. If you'd like to make a donation for the support of the program, you can do that at the website. We continue now with the message, My Grace is Sufficient.
The second thing, the sufficiency that we need so desperately is of grace. It's sufficient for everyday living. For the details of life. Now, Jesus said in John 15:5, without me, ye can do nothing. Obviously, that doesn't mean that you can't do the wrong thing without him, that you can't sin without him. You can do that, but you can't do the right thing. That 15th chapter of the Gospel of John is in the context of fruit bearing. You can't bear fruit. You can't glorify his name unless you abide in him. Without me, you can do nothing. But Paul says in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. All things. Whatever the right things are, whatever the good things are, whatever the godly things are, whatever the things that will bring glory to him and even bring peace and joy in my own life, I can do them through Christ. I can do all things through him. Let's look at an example. Colossians chapter 4. Verse 5 says, walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. This talks about the attitude you're to have toward those that are without, speaking of those outside the church or those who are unbelievers. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man. Now, here's just one little part of Christian living. Let your speech be always seasoned with salt. Let it be always with grace. Now, you think about your speech. What about the conversations that you've had over the past week? Were they filled with grace? Did you have a gracious attitude? If there was a little family spat, a difference of opinion, a little conflict between husband and wife, did you handle that with grace? Was your speech with grace? Was it in kindness? Was it in love? When your children had driven you to the brink and you thought, I can't take another day of this uprising and rebellion that's been going on here in the household, was your speech with grace when you dealt with it? When you had a conflict at work, when somebody was unkind to you, was your speech seasoned with salt? Was it full of grace? You see, that one little area of life is rather challenging, is it not? What's your human nature? Human nature is that if somebody puts you down, man, you're going to see if you can't top that. Oh, sometimes it's done kind of in a joking way, but some people say things in a joking way because that's the way they want to get a point across. They want to put you down. How do you deal with this? How can your speech always be with grace? Well, here's where we have to discover that in every Christian duty, in overcoming the world, in abstaining from the sins of the flesh, in letting our speech be full of grace and of the glory of God, we find we're insufficient for the task. We consistently and miserably fail. But the Apostle Paul says in our text that God's grace is sufficient for us. In fact, he says that there is no temptation that has overtaken us but what is common to man, and with every temptation, our God makes a way of escape. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 40. Verse 29 says, "He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increaseth strength." See, some of you are not ready to claim that promise. You say, "No, that's not the one I need, because I've got some strength, I've got some ability, I've got some ingenuity, I'm not there." Oh, but what a blessing when you get there. When you get to the end of yourself, when you really are aware of your insufficiency, to know that he gives power to the faint and to those that have no might, even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall, and they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength and shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. Mount up with wings as eagles, that mighty bird that soars into the sky with such power and beauty. You who have been bogged down in confusion and discouragement and despair shall mount with eagle's wings, because he is the one who provides the strength. Sufficient, grace is sufficient for everyday living. It's sufficient for those extraordinary trials. Oh, there are troubles and trials that beset us regularly. But there are some more severe than others. Paul talked about one of those in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 8. "For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were pressed out of measure above strength, insomuch that we despaired even of life." Paul thought death was imminent. We despaired of life, but we had the sentence of death in ourselves. That, what was the purpose here? That we should not trust in ourselves, but in God which raiseth the dead. We despaired of life. We had the sentence of death in ourselves, but the whole design was that we might not trust in ourselves, but in God. Haven't you noticed from time to time how the Lord has to bring you forcibly to the place that you're ready to trust him? Oh, you talk a good game. You're willing to come and sing hymns about trusting God. We sang "Have Faith in God," and we sing that, "I trust from our hearts." And you say, "I believe in God. I believe in his word. I do trust him." But much of the time, you don't really do that. You're trusting everything else. You're trusting yourself, you're trusting other people, you're trusting resources, you're trusting circumstances. The Lord brings you to the place through the sorest of trials, the greatest of losses, the deepest of sorrows, where you have to trust him. Oh, you talk a good game. You're willing to come and sing hymns about trusting God. We sang "Have Faith in God," and we sing that, "I trust from our hearts." And you say, "I believe in God, I believe in his word, I do trust him." But much of the time, you don't really do that. You're trusting everything else. You're trusting yourself, you're trusting other people, you're trusting resources, you're trusting circumstances. The Lord brings you to the place through the sorest of trials, the greatest of losses, the deepest of sorrows, where you have to trust him. His grace is sufficient for everyday living. It's sufficient for extraordinary trials. It's sufficient for spiritual turmoil. That's something that's very real. The psalmists, both David, Asaph, and others, talk about it with some frequency. Psalm 13. "How long wilt thou forget me, O Lord, forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall mine enemy be exalted over me?" Have you ever been there? Let me ask you. You get to the place sometimes, particularly some of you young people, that you're assailed with a lot of doubts. you've encountered something in your study, or you've met friends, or you've listened to a teacher who has raised questions that you don't immediately know the answer for it. And a surge of doubt overwhelms you. You begin to ask, do I really believe the Bible? Believe in God just because that's what my parents taught me? Or do I believe it because it's my own conviction? How do I know these things are right? Maybe I've just lived in a sheltered situation all my life and I haven't been exposed to the broad scope of knowledge that's out here in the world. Maybe this is not all right. What if it's not right? Suppose there is no God. What a horrible thought that we're here on this earth just subject to fate or chance with no positive destination in view. That's frightening, isn't it? Say, where am I? And you try to pray and you find difficulty in praying. You say, well, I've prayed, but God didn't answer my prayer. Is there really a God? If there is, why didn't he hear me? Why didn't he answer my prayer? If God's on the throne of heaven, why did he let this situation touch my life? Why did he allow this disruption, this heartbreak, this disappointment? How long will the Lord forget me? How long, Lord, do I live every day with sorrow in my heart? Consider and hear me, O Lord my God. Lighten mine eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. In other words, the burden is so heavy, Lord, it's going to consume me. I'm going to die if you don't come to my rescue. Lest mine enemy say, I have prevailed against him, and those that trouble me rejoice when I am moved. But I have trusted in thy mercy. My heart shall rejoice in thy salvation. I will sing unto the Lord because he hath dealt bountifully with me. Oh, after struggling with the hidings of God's face, he says, I'll have to trust in mercy. There's nowhere else to go. There's no other refuge. There's no other source. Without the Lord, I'm barren, empty, vain, hopeless. I must trust in him. And when Jeremiah described in Lamentations 3 that he was brought down with his mouth in the dust, he had been set as the mark for the arrow, he felt that his hope was gone. Yet in a moment, he said, this I recall to mind, it's of his mercies that we're not consumed, they are new every morning. And he once again was restored in hope. Now we've talked about the need of grace. We've talked about the sufficiency of grace. Finally, we want to talk about the appropriation of grace. If you're in need of this grace, and this grace is sufficient, how do you appropriate it? How do you utilize it? How do you claim it as your own? Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4 and the 14th verse. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. The high priest under the old covenant occupied an extremely important position. The high priest, in order to go into the holy place and offer the sacrifice, had to be attired in the proper garment. When he went in on the great day of atonement to sprinkle the blood of the Lamb upon the mercy seat, which was atop the Ark of the Covenant, he had to go from the outer court into the holy place, into the Holy of Holies. No other man was allowed there, and even the priest could not be there save on the proper appointed day. If he went at another time, if he went without blood in the basin, if he went without the proper linen garment, he'd be struck dead. God would kill him on the spot. That's how vital it was that things be done God's way. The people were at a distance. They were out there to listen carefully to the ringing of the bells against the pomegranates on the bottom of the priestly robe to know he's alive, he's alive. The sacrifice has been made. The blood has been presented. God has received it on our behalf. And now it says, we have a great high priest, Jesus, the Son of God, who's passed into the heavens. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. My, what good news. Our great high priest is not in a tabernacle or temple on earth. He has passed into the heavens. But he once lived here on earth. And he was a man, a perfect man. He was the God-man. He was tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. I concede that that is a difficult passage for me to fathom. Because I know that Jesus Christ was not born with a fallen nature as you and I were. Jesus was a sinless man, but he was a man. The only thing I can possibly envision in this is that since he was perfect, he could experience temptation even in a greater degree than we can, because we have our breaking point. We can go so far in resisting temptation, and we finally cave in. But there was no caving in with Jesus. So when he was tempted, he knew temptation in its fullest scope. But whatever may all be involved in this, the fact remains that this is God's word, that we have a high priest who was here on this earth, and he was tempted by Satan, and he understands. When you go to him then, asking for help, I need grace to help in the time of need. I'm insufficient. I need the sufficiency of thy grace. We have one who understands. Now, when I say he understands, that doesn't mean he's like the gracious old grandfather that pats the little child on the head and says, "That's all right. We just overlook that." No, he understands. But he demonstrated what his attitude about sin was when he was willing to lay down his life and knew that his death was required to put away sin. And God demonstrated his attitude towards sin when he treated his son on the cross like we should have been treated. It's not going soft on sin. Sin is horrendous. Sin offends God. Sin brings great sorrow. But we have a high priest who's not so hard and harsh and so far removed that he doesn't understand our frailties. He understands. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Come boldly. Now that word is not given in contrast or opposition to the thought that we ought to come reverently. That doesn't mean that you become arrogant, that you come rushing into the presence of God making all kinds of demands as though you deserved it and are entitled to it. But it means you come honestly. You come with frankness. You come to pour out your heart. Don't you find it difficult to really be completely straightforward in pouring out your heart to someone when you're heavily burdened? Men especially have a tough time with that. They want to prove I'm tough. Give me enough time, I can work through this. I can handle it. So if you admit to some weakness, if you admit to some problem, if you admit to some struggle, you just admit to a little bit of it. You don't lay it all out there. But he says you can come boldly to the throne of grace and be honest. And Frank, the fact is the Lord already knows all about you anyway. There's no need to try to keep any secrets because there's none from him. Have you ever thought, I wish I had somebody that really would understand? Somebody to whom I could just unburden everything. Just say, I learned a long time ago that you can't trust some people because I unburdened to one person and then they told everybody. So am I going to get caught with that again? Say, I'm very reluctant. Oh, if I had somebody that I could just tell it all to them and they'd understand. I want to tell you, that person is available and he's in a position to do something for you because he's at the right hand of God making intercession for you. He can forgive you of your past sin and give you grace to overcome your present temptation. Therefore, you can come boldly. You come and you confess your doubts and your fears and your wandering affections. Lord, yes, I'm a grown man, but there's sometimes I'm afraid. David said, what time I'm afraid, I will trust in thee. It's all right to admit to the Lord, sometimes, Lord, I'm afraid. Lord, I've made a public profession before the church that I love Jesus Christ. And I wish that I love thee more intently than I do, but sometimes my affections wander. Sometimes I find myself going after the things of the world. Sometimes I find myself thinking on things that I shouldn't think about. You come with complete open confession. And then you can expect tender sympathy and compassion when you've got a truly repentant attitude. Lord, I hate sin. I want to overcome. He will receive the poor, sin-stained soul that comes to him for help. Chapter 7 of the book of Hebrews, verse 22 says, but so much was Jesus made a surety of a better testament, and they truly were many priests because they were not suffered to continue by reason of death. But this man, because he continueth ever, hath an unchangeable priesthood. Nobody going to ever replace him. Wherefore, he is able also to save to the uttermost them that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. What good news. See, back under the old covenant, the people were at a distance. They couldn't come into the tabernacle. They couldn't come into the holy place. They couldn't look on the mercy seat. They couldn't see the Shekinah glory. They were separated. But now you can come boldly to a throne of grace. Not to the bar of justice, but to the throne of grace. Come directly into the presence of God. You don't need an earthly priesthood. You don't need some person on earth to intercede for you. You already have one. If you're a believer in Jesus Christ, you have one who is at the right hand of God, where he ever lives to make intercession for us. For such an high priest became us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and made higher than the heavens, who needeth not daily, as those high priests, to offer up sacrifice, first for his own sins and then for the people's. For this he did once when he offered himself. He offered himself without spot to God, and God received the sacrifice. You can enter this place at all times. Hebrews 10, verse 19. Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, which he hath consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say, his flesh, and having an high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us draw near. You say, well, I fear to come. No, it's sinners. It's sinners who are saved by his grace. You can come. You come to him in submission. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another and be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. You come in submission. Job suffered such a great loss. He lost his flocks. He lost his herds. He lost his family. He lost his health. And his wife came and said, Job, why don't you curse God and die? He said, you speak as a foolish woman. Shall we receive good from the hand of God and not evil? He said, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. There was submission. Grace sufficient. Grace sufficient for every trial. How wonderful to know that there's grace for us even when the rod of correction is put upon us. Hebrews chapter 12, Verse 7, if ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as sons, for what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then you're bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we've had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? When the chastening rod falls, when God is dealing with you and you're perplexed and you're confused and you can't understand what it's all about, you bow in humble submission. Come to him in submission. Come to him in faith. For he's promised he cares. He cares for you. He says in Hebrews 13, 5 and 6, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is our helper. Romans 8, 31 says, if God be for us, who can be against us? If God is for you, none can successfully prevail against you. Paul says, my grace is sufficient for thee. Aren't you glad to know that? Remember, you're not left alone. You're not fighting the battles of life by yourself. When the burden is so heavy, the sorrow is so great, the night is so dark and long, you're not left alone. Therefore, Paul said, I'll glory in my infirmities, for when I am weak, then am I strong. The teaching of Scripture is in absolute contradiction to the philosophy of man. Man says, when you're strong, you're strong. God says, when you're weak, you're strong, because then you find your strength in him. There's a need of grace. I hope you see that and feel that. There's a sufficiency of grace. My grace is sufficient for thee. You appropriate it by coming boldly where? To the throne of grace. If you've been touched by the grace of God and have never confessed him publicly, that opportunity is given you as we stand to sing.
It's reassuring to know that whatever our trial may be, no matter how heavy the burden, God's grace is sufficient for us. If you would like to get this complete message on CD, request it when writing us. Our address is the Baptist Bible Hour, Box 17037, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45217. Till we greet you next time, this is LeSere Bradley Jr. bidding you goodbye, and may God bless you.
Praising my Savior.